Okay, well, good afternoon. As you're aware, on Friday I returned from a successful visit to the Pacific Islands Forum in the Marshall Islands last week. I'm pleased to report that all the Pacific leaders that attended are in great heart, and it was a very productive forum. New Zealand takes its responsibilities in the Pacific very seriously. We spend around about 60% of our total aid budget in the Pacific, and with a focus on building infrastructure and capability. And our attendance at the forum, I believe, demonstrates our commitment to the region. On a separate matter, like most New Zealanders, I was excited to see Team New Zealand kick off its America's Cup campaign on Sunday, and that was a magnificent start, and it was great to see them claim yet another win in San Francisco earlier today. This means that they need just six more wins to lift the cup for the first time in 10 years, whereas, as you'll be aware, Oracle Team USA needs 10 wins just to keep it. Also earlier this morning, New Zealand time equestrian rider Jock Padgett claimed his second major eventing title for the year when he won the prestigious Burley International Horse Trials on Clifton Promise. I believe this is the first time since 1989 a rider has won the Bamington Burley Double in the same calendar year. Not only that, New Zealand claimed all of the top three spots at Burley, with Andrew Nicholson finishing second and third on two of his horses. These results go on to further highlight New Zealand's sporting prowess on the international stage. Just on the Australian federal elections, by now you will have seen I've spoken to Prime Minister-elect Tony Abbott by phone yesterday to congratulate him on his victory. This provided an opportunity to reiterate the very strong relationship that underpins our two countries, and I look forward to having a very positive working relationship with Tony Abbott's government over the coming years. Soon after my return to New Zealand from an upcoming overseas trip, I'll make a short one-day visit to Australia to meet Mr. Abbott. Just in terms of international travel, coming up in terms of early next week, I'll be departing for a visit to the United Kingdom, France and the United Nations in New York. While in Britain, I'll have a bilateral meeting with UK Prime Minister David Cameron, Foreign Secretary William Hague and the Leader of the Opposition Ed Miliband. In France, I'll meet with the President Francois Hollande along with Prime Minister and the Economic and Finance Ministers. This will be my first visit to France since Mr. Hollande became President last year. At the invitation of the Queen, my family and I will also make a private visit to join Her Majesty at the Royal Residence of Balmoral in Scotland on the weekend of the 20th to the 22nd of September. This visit to Balmoral was first scheduled to take place 3 years ago, but was cancelled at the time because of the earthquake that took place in Canterbury on the 4th of September 2010. In New York, I'll attend the opening week of the United Nations General Assembly. This is the single largest gathering of world leaders where global issues such as the response to developments in Syria are likely to be the main focus of attention. That week will also be an opportunity to advance New Zealand's interests and to promote New Zealand's candidature for a non-permanent seat on the United Nations Security Council for 2015-16. At this stage, I'm scheduled to deliver a statement in the general debate on Thursday, the 26th of September. I also have bilateral meetings with a number of other world leaders. I depart New Zealand on the evening of Tuesday, the 17th of September, and I return on Sunday morning, the 29th of September. As I mentioned earlier, this will be an important trip, so sadly it means it's highly unlikely that I'll be able to travel to see any of the America's Cup races. I'll definitely be there cheering them on in spirit. A number of ministers are attending, though, including Sport and Recreation Minister Murray McCulley, who will be making a trip to San Francisco to support the team later in the week. Just in terms of my activities this week, it's a recess week in the House, so tomorrow I'll be in Christchurch, where I'm giving a speech on the progress of the rebuild and recovery, including a couple of announcements at that speech tomorrow. I'll be in Auckland on Wednesday, Dunedin on Thursday, and Whakatane on Friday. Questions? Not really. I mean, I had a brief discussion with Tony Abbott yesterday afternoon. But look, around the world, our embassies and high commissions continue to exchange views and gather ideas. See, the G20 has been talking about over the weekend, and we're continuing to assess any information that's provided to us. Yeah, it's something we're still considering. I guess, like others, we're waiting to see what comes out of the US vote this week.
When the US keeps saying they've got 10 or 12 countries supporting them,
yep,
they won't name them. Do you think New Zealand is among them?
Probably not at this stage, but you know, we'll see how that progresses.
Have you given any indication as to which way you might go on? Have you given any indication to America?
No, I don't believe we have. I mean, that contact came through Secretary Kerry to Murray McCulley. I don't think there's been further direct contact since then, and at the time I think he indicated we'd go away and give that some consideration.
How important is this call which you make either way, given in terms of establishing New Zealand's position in the world and where we're at on policy guides?
Well, I mean, I would maintain whatever call we made, it would still very much reflect that New Zealand runs independent foreign policy. I mean, we here are disgusted by what we see taking place in Syria. Like the rest of the world, we're shocked by those scenes. And we also have a very strong preference that the United Nations Security Council shows leadership both individually and collectively. The question will ultimately be, okay, if there is a view held that's not possible to get a resolution out of the UN, would we then give moral support to the United States or others that might take unilateral action? And that's something we just need to consider. But we would make that call based on the merits of the information we've been provided and whether we think we've, broadly speaking, exhausted the likely options available to us through a multilateral approach. It wouldn't get tested in such a way, in so much that we wouldn't be going to the Parliament to get a vote on that, but we would almost certainly go to the Parliament with a ministerial statement, and there would be other leaders. I think there would be a mixture of views. I'm not really sure how Labour would respond to that. Certainly the Greens and others would vote against it, I'm sure, if we decided to support them.
We're offering support, moral support outside of the UN mandate, not weaken New Zealand's case for an alternative state and security mandate?
Well, there can always be implications for your bid on the Security Council. And there are lots and lots of decisions that we've been making over the course of the last couple of years. Every one of them has the potential to either earn or lose, lose votes. And I've no doubt that might fit in that category. On the other side of the coin, the lens that we'll really be looking through this issue at is whether we believe that some action is warranted, even if the UN won't support it, on the basis of the issue rather than the broader issue of New Zealand wanting to get on the Security Council. I mean, it may be one of those situations where New Zealand just simply has to say, while our preference would be the Security Council, we can understand why unilateral action has been taken. And if that's the call we make, then I think we'll do that irrelevant of the consequences for the Security Council. Yeah, well, our embassies have been in discussions and continue to have discussions on this issue, as I understand it. And I think New Zealand's made its position very clear. I think the Foreign Minister himself has made a number of statements which have effectively called for the UN Security Council, and we were obviously party to the statement that the Pacific Forum leaders issued last week, which very strongly said both individually and collectively we wanted to see leadership on this issue. So, yes, effectively we are doing that. Well, that was the view of leaders that should be expressed in the communique on the balance of the information that they had had presented to them, either collectively or individually. In other words, there's no question talking to David Cameron and others. They are absolutely of the view that the Assad regime is responsible and that it's not possible for the opposition to have carried out these attacks. That is certainly consistent with the evidence that we have had supplied to us, but I can't verify that evidence. All I can say is that's the information that we've had supplied to us by our partners. On that basis, we were happy to accept that wording. Well, we haven't made a decision as a cabinet yet about which way we want to go, and so we haven't had an opportunity, I think, to sit down, dissect every single piece of evidence we've got and maybe ask further questions on that. All I can tell you is all of the reporting that I've seen that's come to me and the discussions I've had with everyone from sort of Kevin Rudd right through to David Cameron, they have been absolutely categorical in their view that responsibility rests with the Assad regime.
Does the signing of the Washington-Rome Declaration, the closer relations that you've formed with the US and military ties, does that now make it more difficult to not
get? No, I don't think so. That's really a declaration about us exercising, you know, in the future and formalising what we'd previously done. It fast-tracked some things that were a bit of a slower process. But no, I don't think it forces our hand. I mean, that's something we all need to consider. Well, I think it'd be a tremendous boost for Auckland and New Zealand. I mean, I think the cup would bring, you know, the viaduct, you know, bursting back into life once more as it did, you know, a decade or so ago. You know, from New Zealand's point of view, hosting these international events, it's not just the tourists that come, but it's the profile that we get, just as, you know, like many of us, you know, we're watching the TV screens and looking at San Francisco and the beauty of their harbour. So I think it's good for New Zealand tourism, and obviously if the cup comes back to New Zealand, then the government will have to consider what support it's prepared to provide. We haven't considered that matter, although there's some preliminary advice just looking at what the implications are in terms of infrastructure and funding, if that was an option available to us. Yes, MB and others are just looking at what it means for the viaduct area and what it ultimately, you know, what ultimate contribution we might be required to consider. And again, all those things, we don't want to get ahead of ourselves. Let's see our guys win the cup first. But obviously it'd be sensible for us to at least consider the issue. Well, I think the better way to describe it is, on the basis that they win the cup, then it's far more likely that we would be looking to make a contribution to another effort, or in this case, defending the cup. Don't know. I mean, the last contribution was just short of 40 million, wasn't it? 37 million, I think. Way too early to be absolutely sure, but you've got to imagine a few years on, these things don't tend to get cheaper. Yeah, so you remember when the proposal was brought earlier in the year? That was, I think, a special meeting, actually. This is the annual meeting that's taking place. So it's true that we are looking at the issue once again, and the real reason for having yet more discussions is that there are 25 members and you need unanimous support. So, of course, we could just say, you know, it's our way or the highway, but the problem with that is that that won't progress the issue at all, and people will continue to fish in that sort of wedge that's currently available for fishing in the Ross Sea. So, I mean, I think our people are just trying to see whether it's possible that another series of options might find favour with those that reject them. Now, it doesn't mean in the end we'll agree to it. It's not formalised. I haven't actually seen the proposal yet, but you know, I trust our officials to see whether there's a way to navigate through this issue.
But you can, officials didn't seek support from other countries for the revised draft?
Well, I think they're working their way through tentatively to see whether some other options would be acceptable to other partners.
Environmentalists are pretty disappointed that it's a tactical mistake and baffling to do it without support
or agreement. Well, the only other option would be to say we stand fast on our earlier proposal, in which case I haven't seen anything to indicate that those that opposed it last time would change their position. And environmentally, that certainly doesn't take you forward, because we actually accept the argument that there does need to be some change. So from our point of view, you know, we could stick with the current position we've got, but I just don't think we'll get a resolution on that basis. Yeah, I mean, that's definitely a possibility, but I mean, permanent in so much, these things are always open to negotiation by the members of the treaty.
The police officer who was attacked, Simon Tate, I just this morning said that he was on solo patrols.
Yep.
There was your understanding that there were enough resources to allow solo patrols. Are you satisfied with the numbers there?
Well, I haven't seen any advice to support the claim that's an issue. I mean, generally speaking, we've added hundreds and hundreds of more police officers over the course of the last 4 or 5 years, 600 I think in total, and we've also given the police a lot more resources to both support their activities when they're out and about and to ensure that there are more essential policing hours through the technology we've got. So tasers and the likes are there for officers, depending on what their duties are, and there's certainly well established protocols if an officer feels at risk. So look, in the end, happy to talk to the Minister of Police about it, but I haven't seen any advice to support that claim.
On the issue of LVRs, yep. Concerned that, you know, they haven't come in yet, but we've already seen premiums being increased on low equity loans, some fixed rates have gone up as well. Is there the first time buyer already starting to get pretty?
Well, I think the reason you're seeing a slight increase in fixed rates are because the market is building in that they think the Reserve Bank will raise rates over the course of the next 12 months. And that's because they can look at the previous monetary policy statements from the bank indicating that inflation is likely to rise over the course of the next 12 months. Now, it's very low at the moment, 0.7% still. So there's the bond market always leads actually what's physically effectively happening, so that's not surprising that's there. I mean, look, in the end, I mean, all we can do is wait and see whether this policy works. It's been an option that was available to the bank. They made that decision to do that. Obviously, they had discussions with the government, but in the end, they have the independent right to do it. I think it would still be better to have those restrictions in place, as the bank has done that, and to protect the housing market rather than leave it totally unchecked and have a situation where there's a bubble that bursts and those very first home buyers are left with, you know, a very, you know, overpriced home. So we do have to have proper controls in there, and I think it's inevitable that you will see some changing in the pricing.
Yeah, look, as you say, interest rates, the forecast is for interest rates to go up 70 or something.
Yep.
Like that. Will the government help the Reserve Bank in terms of your fiscal impulse? Will you, in terms of your spending in election year and the budget, will you restrain that spending to help those mortgage borrowers?
Well, I believe we've done that over the course of the last 5 years. We've been conservative of what we've been doing, and many of the both spending decisions that we've made have supported the Reserve Bank, or alternatively changes that we've made to liberalise the economy, whether it's through the labour markets or others, have actually helped the Reserve Bank's position, because what they're worried about is non-inflationary growth, or what they're worried about is inflationary growth, so they support non-inflationary growth. So from that point of view, I think we've made a lot of the right steps. I don't anticipate that 2014 will be some sort of massive lolly scramble. Of course, we'll go into the election and we'll have a series of policies that we will campaign on, but they'll be within a pretty tightly defined fiscal window. Look, if it comes to trying to buy the electorate, Labour will always do that better than National, because Labour are notoriously large spenders. So don't look for us to be a big change in the way we've operated coming to election 2014. There won't be some massive spend up. But yes, of course, there'll be one or two policies that we believe we can afford over the course of the next 3 years. Well, we're not going to do things that we believe are going to put enormous pressure on the Reserve Bank to raise rates as a result of our actions. I mean, inevitably, rates are likely to rise a little bit because they're on a 50 to 60 year low. Inflation's likely to pick up a little bit. And I think the bank has the exchange rate coming down a bit in their forecast, and that's likely to add slightly to imported inflation. But I mean, overall, it's still a, you know, these are very low levels of interest rates that New Zealanders are enjoying. And that's actually helping them in terms of their disposable income, because in the end, if you look at real wage growth in the time we've been in office, it's been positive. Actually, if you look at real wage growth in the time that Labour was in office the last 9 years, it was barely above zero. I mean, for all of the pay rises people got, inflation and increasing interest rates ate away at all of those gains. Yes. Well, again, I mean, we would look at it through the perspective of trying to help our Pacific neighbours. And so we work with the Chinese and the Americans and on a variety of different issues, both defence issues. And as you've seen, in terms of aid issues, we worked alongside China and Rarotonga last year for a particular delivery of an aid project. So I don't think it requires us actually to pick sides. But the fisheries is the really big issue for these Pacific leaders. If you really talk to them, that's where the bulk of their income comes from, most of them outside of tourism. And so they want to both maximise and protect that resource. And that's one of the big focuses of attention we've had over the last few years. Yep. Well, I raised the issue, yeah, that I thought we should do it.
So that might
Well, yeah, I think it's certainly consistent. I mean, if you think about the communique and that was written by for the forum leaders, it was it really had three parts, didn't it? And essentially said, we condemn what's happening in Syria, we believe the Assad regime is responsible, and we call on the Security Council individually and collectively to show leadership. And certainly that would be consistent with my view.
Just on that point, would New Zealand have a concern whether any military action taken against the Assad regime
Well, I mean, I think you raise a sort of fair point about the delicacy of both politics in Syria and the region. I mean, as I think I said last week, it's a very complicated region, and Syria has a range of complicated relationships there. So they're all the sort of factors that we would need to consider if we were to finally offer moral support for the United States or others taking action. I mean, what would be the consequences of that action is the very question that we would have to ask. And that's a fair point that we raise when we talk to other leaders. And the counter argument to that is, yes, but thousands of people are losing their lives or suffering as a result of the actions of the regime. And is there a point in time where leaders are required around the world to ride into the defence of the people of Syria if their very own government is turning on them? And that's the dilemma. And I think if you talk to a David Cameron or someone, that's what they genuinely feel. They feel they are the last bastion of hope and support for the people of Syria.
So I guess the question is there a form of military action which will express the world's disdain for the actions over chemical weapons, but not to be of a sort that will alter the balance of power?
That's the delicate part, and I can't absolutely, say that that's possible at this point. But I haven't seen anything that would indicate that any military strike would be looking to seek regime change. And that's not what I've seen indicated at this point. It could ultimately be what is decided, but that's not the way I'm reading the likely action. Well, I wasn't privy to that conversation, so I've really kind of only really had it second hand. You probably best need to ask the Foreign Minister.
Just on the America's Cup, you mentioned the figure of, I think, 40 million that we put into this campaign.
Yep.
But wouldn't it be considerably more than that for defence, because you'd be also investing in infrastructure as well as a team?
Well, I think that's a fair assumption, and that's the point I'm making, that we would need to go away and get some advice of what it all means. But, if the team wins the cup, then one will assume they'll defend it in New Zealand. It's coming back to New Zealand. So I'd imagine, like the rest of the country, we'd be wanting to celebrate that fact and also think about how we can best assist them in the defence of the cup. I mean, certainly, if you go back and look at, the last time we defended it, well, it was something that brought a lot of joy and pride to New Zealanders, and we host a lot of international events, from Rugby World Cup to Cricket World Cup in 2015 to the Under-20s FIFA World Cup. Something like the America's Cup, putting to one side whatever costs we would have to potentially bear, is highly affordable. Hosting an Olympics, or maybe even sometimes, well, not so much a Commonwealth Games, but certainly an Olympics is not. So I don't perceive there to be any fiscal threat that we couldn't actually manage.
And in terms of people's expectations, right, you mentioned the last defence, I mean, has something been lost since then? Obviously, there weren't many challenges that turned up this time, and visitor numbers were way down.
Yeah.
I mean, should New Zealanders kind of tone down their expectations for a defence here if it does happen?
Well, I mean, again, it will depend. You can make the case it was different, a decade or so ago. I don't know. People have been up in San Francisco tell me that, when they've been down at the base and things, it's been a pretty awesome atmosphere. So, New Zealanders like yachting, they like sailing, and they love Team New Zealand. So it might be that in a smaller city, in a smaller country where yachting is a big event and a big deal, it just meets with a different response. No, No, I mean, we've never made a secret of the fact that, A, the $36 million or $37 million that was put in was done by a Labor government, and, B, when we came in, we tested whether it was absolutely cast iron that that payment had to be made. You would expect us to do that. We also came in on the back of predictions that unemployment would go to 10-odd%, New Zealand would be in deficit for a decade or more. There were no circumstances under which Treasury thought we would get back into surplus, and there were a lot of New Zealanders saying that giving money to an America's Cup was very much in their nice-to-haves compared to giving support to people that might lose their jobs. So I don't make any apologies for that. I mean, that just is the way it is. But as it turned out, we did stay with it. We have paid it, and it is there. We're not debating that point. We're just simply saying what might happen if they win.
It's a good investment after all.
Come and ask me if they win.
Would you do it if they lost?
If they lost, it would be much more difficult for us to put more money in again. I think before, my understanding is foreign ministers working with other leaders to organise that.
So you don't have a date for it yet?
I don't have a date, but I know he's working on it.
Are you aware of any other Commonwealth prime ministers who've been to Balmoral?
Commonwealth prime ministers. No, I can't think of any. I mean, obviously, David Cameron as a British Prime Minister goes every year, but no.
Then why do you think you've
been going? Don't know. I mean, it's obviously a great thrill to be asked to go. I mean, we're looking forward to it. It's a highly unique event, and it's going to be an amazing opportunity, and it's great to have the family there. I mean, the first time we were invited was just Brona and I, but when I went to see the Queen last time, she asked me if we'd like to come back, and we'd like to bring the children. Oh, look, I'm sure there'll be 2 days of discussion, so there'll be lots of things that she'll want to talk about.
Just in terms of your meeting with Tony Abbott, why do you feel the urgency for it, given you've obviously met APEC and...
Yeah, I mean, I suppose you describe it. I mean, look, urgent might be, rushing over this week, and he hasn't been sworn in and may well not be sworn in this week. So, I mean, it just sort of fits in within the timing. But this is our most important relationship. It's a relationship that is so incredibly multifaceted. Doesn't really matter what part of sort of life New Zealand has an engagement, with Australia, from war to sport. So it makes sense for us to get together. I'd anticipate we'll probably have lunch or dinner, and that'll be it. It'll be partly an opportunity to talk about a whole range of things, but obviously setting out the kind of work program makes sense. I mean, again, you're right, of course, we'll see each other at APEC and Chogham and other events, but I think it makes sense just to kick it off with some sort of, informal, formal dinner, if that makes sense. I may not be, simply because, depending on when he's sworn in, if we assume that's early next week, and I'm away for a week and a half, it's not possible for me to get over, so it's always eminently possible someone else will turn up in Australia, but I don't think that matters too much. But outside that, we'll certainly be one of the early leaders.
Did you say you were leaving on the 17th?
Yeah, which is next... No, I'm here. I'm staying for question time, leaving in the evening. So that, part of the balancing act has been to make sure I'm here for the first question time with the new leader.
Who will that be?
David Cunliffe. See you later.